Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's March 2023, and this is episode 332, which is a conversation about college-bound students and giving them a little bit of advice as they think about attending college, more like exhortations. And actually, May 1st is coming right up, and so we hope that this episode is helpful for college-bound students and their parents as they make that decision on May 1st for where they're going to commit to attend college. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Lewis Marcos. He is professor in English and scholar in residence at Houston Christian University. He holds the Robert H. Ray Chair in Humanities, and he has published 25 books, including his latest work, which was published in 2022, called Ancient Voices, An Insider's Look at the Early Church. Lou has written a viewpoint article for our print edition, which is volume 45, number 2 and 3, which came out at the end of last year. Viewpoint articles address relevant contemporary issues in discernment, apologetics, and Christian living, and they come from a particular perspective that's not always shared by every Christian. We hope that our readers' thinking on these different viewpoint issues will be stimulated and enhanced whether or not our readers end up agreeing with the author who wrote the article. Lou's viewpoint article is called Exhortations to College-Bound Students, and you can read his article for free on our website, equip.org. Now, normally this article is in our print edition. It's not usually articles that we make available to everybody, but we do think that this topic is timely and of help to many Christian parents. So we are making this article free for everyone. If you would like to read the entire issue, please subscribe at our website, equip.org. Lou, it's good to have you on the podcast again.
It's great to be back, Melanie.
Well, today we are discussing issues surrounding college and just some advice that Lou has for college students and probably their parents as well. And we find ourselves, as I noted, in March 2023, and May 1st is the big deadline where students are going to decide exactly where they're going to say yes to. And so high school students have a lot of things that they're considering. So I just wanted to find out from Lou just some of his advice and wisdom. And even though this article, as I noted, was published in our print journal last fall, I find that this subject matter is extremely timely considering the deadline that's looming for students to make that final decision of where to go. But before we get started on some of the do's and don'ts wisdom that Lou wants to give students and their parents, you know, why should any student go to college in the first place?
Now, let's begin, Melanie, by just being honest, okay? Like the parents that are listening to this podcast, I sometimes get very depressed as well and think, why are we doing this? They're only messing up our kids. Why should you go? I even sometimes feel a little bit guilty encouraging one of my students to go on and get a PhD and be a professor. But Melanie, we cannot give in to this despair. Things like this have happened before. It's been crazy before. When I was in college, all they ever talked about was gay rights, nuclear, you know, Armageddon. I mean, it's really been crazy for a long time. We're just hearing about it more because the media is so polarized. Every little thing that happens, we hear about. I mean, when you look at the statistics, school shootings are not more than they were 50 years ago. We just hear about them. They're in our face again and again and again. So the first thing is, do not despair. Here's the second thing, and I may get myself in trouble here, Melanie, but in the same way that it's terrible that the university has given itself over to postmodernism, and every conservative Christian has to be aware of this and know how to resist it. But we are also at fault, conservatives like myself, who believe in capitalism. Capitalism is good, Melanie. Aside from Christianity, it's taken more people out of poverty than anything. I'm not anti-capitalism. But too often, we, including conservative Christians, have given into this idea that the college is a business, that education is a commodity. This is why we have swallowed hook, line, and sinker online education for undergraduates. I'm okay for graduates. but there's no reason why undergraduates should be getting an online degree. That's ridiculous. We've lost a sense of what a liberal arts education is about. Now, look, I'm not against students majoring in nursing or business or pre-med, but it's not a real education if you're not also going to a liberal arts college that is giving you core courses in literature, history, philosophy, Christianity, if it's a Christian school, also math and science. And we have got to resist this narrow view of college as a simple commodity. College is an experience. What it used to be, and I wish it will be again, is a middle passage between high school and adulthood. It is a time, generally between 18 and 21 years old, where we get together and discuss the great books, wrestle with the great ideas. It needs to be in person. It needs to be incarnational. And yes, a lot of professors are saying crazy things, but instead of running away screaming, let this be a lesson to us to read things like the Christian Research Journal, to study apologetics, to understand how logic works. And if we do that, we can have our faith strengthened even when it's challenged. But Melanie, it is important, and I think it's vital, that if you're going to a secular school, not only should you get involved with a church that's close to the school, but that is not enough. Churches are not focused on college students. That's because they're focused on adults and children. That's what they are. You need to be part of a parachurch group like Crew, InterVarsity, Navigators. I am the faculty sponsor for Ratio Christi, which is a group dedicated to apologetics. One of those groups you need to be part of so you can get together and discuss the kinds of challenges you are having in your classroom. But if you do that, your faith can be strengthened. We must not give way to fear. We must not give way to despair. We must not just give up. It is still a good thing to go to a school that's going to challenge our ideas, that's going to make us look at the great books and the legacy that has been passed down to us for thousands of years, and to ask the big questions that once we have a job and have a family, we may not have time to ask those questions. So we need to do this in this opportune moment. It is a good thing, and we must not give in to despair. Although, one last thing, I still would encourage you to go to a Christian school. We need to stop with this vanity of saying, my kid has to go to Harvard, Princeton, Yale. If God has directly led them there, that's fine. But it's time we just give up on these schools and strengthen our own schools. Again, you've got to do what the Lord is calling you to do. But we need to think about it again and not give way to vanity.
Do you think that Christian parents or students do have an idealized vision of well-known schools and maybe are trying to pick those based on, you know, I don't know, just history and those kinds of things?
I mean, we do. I mean, these used to be great schools, but more and more, they seem to be more taken over by the wokeness. They're not there to learn from the great books. They're there to sit in judgment upon them. Now, again, if you have a strong faith, if you have a good support community, you can be strengthened by this and you can thrive. But we need to understand that. And maybe there will be a pendulum swing, Melanie. I'm trying to be optimistic here. But more and more of them have not only turned over to whatever Marxist ideas, less and less are they wrestling with the books of our tradition, starting with the Iliad and the Odyssey on one hand and the five books of Moses on the other. And again, what was it? Was it Yale or Princeton? It was either Yale or Harvard that stopped their art history class that they used to teach for 100 years, taking you through the great art history, especially the Renaissance. They've dropped that now because they think it's, you know, dead white males or something like that. Again, let's be honest, though. Even at these crazy schools, I would still theorize that the majority of teachers still really care about education and students. It's just that they are intimidated. And we have to realize that we're all intimidated. It's not just the kids, it's the adults, it's the PhDs. Sometimes PhDs are more self-conscious about what people think about them than people that don't even go to college. So we have to search. I went to secular schools. I found professors that I could work with, that challenged me, that respected what I believed. And oddly enough, Melanie, a lot of my mentors, even back in the 80s, were more secular Jewish teachers. Now, that sounds funny, but the secular Jewish teachers had no axe to grind. The worst teachers are the ones that grew up in a Christian home, have rejected it, and want to make everybody else reject it, kind of like a Bart Ehrman. That's the absolute worst person. A lot of times, the people that are not believers but are not angry, oddly enough, are sometimes more objective and you can work with them. So the good people are still there. But, you know, as we grow better and better schools, Christian schools, we should think about, you know, going there and getting that kind of education. Because I'm talking about a lot of stuff here, Melanie, but again, we forget that the modern statistic is that most people will change their career three times, not just their job. So if we go to college only for a narrow specialization, when we change our career, we really have wasted our education. But if we focus on the liberal arts, but that also includes math. You know, math used to be a liberal art. Nobody's majoring in math either, by the way, not just English and history. We need to reclaim those because the businesses keep saying they want humanities majors. They want graduates who can think on their feet, who have critical and creative thinking skills, who can communicate, who can think outside of the box. A true liberal arts education helps us to do this, helping. But if you're lucky enough to be at a school that cares about the good, the true, and the beautiful, and about instilling wisdom and virtue and eloquence, all the better. But again, we must not give up. And again, I love both of my kids teach in classical schools. I speak for classical schools. It would be great if all Christians could send their kids to a classical Christian private school, but that's not going to happen. We can't completely abandon the public schools, but we just need to do so with caution. We need to talk with our kids around the dinner table about the issues. Again, the very thing that CRJ does. And like I said, if you're away from college and away from your parents, then get in a group that is focused on those issues, that wants to talk about worldview. The best way you can prepare yourself for a secular college is to go to Summit Ministries in Manitou Springs. That's right near Colorado Springs. They have, of all the ones I've been to, they're the best worldview academy. Get prepared by understanding worldviews and the paradigms and presuppositions that underlie those. If we don't have that, it will be so easy to pull us astray. So we do need to be more forearmed than maybe we were 30 or 40 years ago. But this is also the heyday of apologetics. So there are so many resources out there. I mean, I've got my own books, but you've got Nancy Piercy, you've got William Lane Craig. I mean, Mike Lacona. I mean, these are some of the ones that teach at my school. There are so many great, great apologists out there that will help young people to learn how to assess what is being taught them. Not just the facts that are being taught them, but the worldview and the presuppositions and the hypotheses that underlie that. If you go to a school well-armed like that, you have a good prayer life, you have fellowship, you will survive. These are not evil in the sense that, you know, they're given over to the devil, okay? There's still a lot of good people there. It's just the bad people make a lot of noise. So maybe I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here, but let's not give in to despair. Let's go where God sends us and be prepared.
As I do for every episode, I want to urge you to partner with us. We could not do this without you. And the best way that you can help us out is to subscribe to the Christian Research Journal for $33.50, which you can do at our website, equip.org. There at the Postmodern Realities tab at any episode on any landing page, you could give us a tip if a full subscription is not in your budget. And as always, one of the best ways that you can help us is just to continue telling people about this podcast and about our magazine, getting the word out, letting people know how they can listen to it, and posting your favorite episodes. And for an extra bonus, if you would gift us your time, to go to Apple Podcasts and rate and review, specifically a written review of this podcast, we would be so grateful. As you know, pretty much everything on the internet just runs by data and the algorithm. And the more something is liked and talked about, the more the algorithm thinks it's something others would enjoy. And I'm sure you think that this podcast is something that you know other people would appreciate listening to. So thank you for partnering with us. It means so much to us. And again, we could not keep bringing you this free podcast every week without your help. Now, you touched on this. I do want to get to your article, but I have a student who, one of my kids is a freshman in college. And so, of course, I'm part of the parent group for his university. And an anonymous mother posted this just, I want to say, a couple weeks ago. And why don't you answer her? Because she is very stressed out. So she says this, no one will know because it was anonymous and there's a lot of universities, but it says, I worry about my son's future. He's majoring in English with a concentration in rhetoric. And I worry about his future. What will he do with an English major? Did he make the right decision? I'm so stressed over this. I have no idea what's going to happen to his future. So this student is a junior, and that's a direct quote from a mother saying, this has been a waste of his time. And she also says, everything seems like there's a demand for STEM students, and so that adds to my worry. So how would you answer this, mother?
Again, it's I hear these things from parents as well. Okay, look, if you absolutely positively know you want to be a nurse or a doctor, you can take that track. But most people end up working in an office of one kind or another. Now, if you're an English major, of course you might teach. And by the way, a lot of my students who, when they came in, said, I will never teach, when they understand what's going on at classical Christian and classical charter schools, it changes their mind when they realize there are schools where where knowledge and wisdom are still being taught. But again, let's say we don't want any of that. All of the skills that you are gaining as an English major are going to set you apart. The statistics I read say that, okay, the English major may make a little less money than the business major when they start out, but in the end, they surpass the business major because they have the critical skills, the ability to think outside the box, to make connections, to uncover assumptions. All of these things allow them to rise up in the business, because they see, here is a person that can really think for themselves. Here is someone that we don't have to micromanage, that they are able to think outside the box, make new connections, look forward, understand a little bit more about human psychology. So what I'm seeing in statistics is that those students will quickly overtake and exceed the other ones because they have the ability to be flexible, to learn new things. They have a matrix. I like to tell my students, I'm an English professor, that my job is to make myself obsolete. That if I teach you well enough and take you into an understanding of thematic structures and whatnot, that a point comes when you can pick up the book and analyze it without me. And this is what businesses need. People that have the ability to analyze and synthesize, to see new things. Again, businesses are looking for humanities majors because they need those critical and creative skills that they're not seeing in people who have just learned a trade and nothing else. They have no flexibility. And I'm sure, Melanie, you've heard this, that people keep telling me that, 10 years from now, 20% of the jobs that exist today won't even exist, and there'll be 30% new jobs. So we don't know what the future holds, but if we have, and also, if we've majored in something we love, that we're passionate about, it gives us a perspective and an ability to be adaptable and flexible to move with a changing economy and a changing business, to be able to read and understand people and move forward. So again, a lot of it is just kind of propaganda we're hearing. We're giving into fears. The best thing a student can do, again, if you want to be a nurse, that's a special track. But most people are not on a track like that. Let them major in something they love so they will absorb it and learn how to read and interpret.
Well, I was an English major, and I definitely had to, I loved my major. I was a double major, actually, but my dad was very adamant about going to school to learn how to think, because he had been a philosophy major undergrad, even though he has an MBA. But that's a different story for a different time. Now, before we get into your article, I still want to ask this question, because we're not going to be talking about student debt because it is in the news, but a lot of people will say there is too much of a financial investment. So is college even worth it? In other words, What can college teach me or teach my student that they couldn't learn from a job or just even everyday life? Is there any value to paying so much money to go to college?
It really is that thinking about life. Let me put it this way, Melanie. My favorite audience to speak for are doctors, lawyers, businessmen, engineers in their 50s, 60s, and 70s who missed the humanities going up, and now they realize what they've lost. There's a sort of dimension that's lost, and they're hungry to try to find that later on. And so let's get this at an early stage. Get us thinking about issues and what we value, and what is that which lasts, and what is that which passes away. We just need, first of all, a lot of the debt people are in has nothing to do with college per se, but with just a crazy mad use of credit cards, not thinking about what they're paying or what they're buying. It's better if we, now I'm told that this generation, the ones that are in college right now, are a little bit different than the millennials. Some of them will even take a year off to save up money because they don't want to be in super duper debt. But you can still get by. And again, one of my friends who went on and got a business major says the statistics still show that even financially, the college education still pays off, if you want to be thinking in those terms. It's still going to allow you to rise up. You may not be making as much in the beginning, but you will be making much more later. And you will have that foundation of having wrestled with ideas and challenged your brain. Because a lot of people just stop reading when they finish school. A good liberal arts college education is going to make you a lifelong learner and a lifelong reader so that you continue to grow. And it's just so difficult because when you don't read nowadays, we just get so easily dragged in, not just by propaganda, but by consumerism. We've lost our sense of discernment. So everything that I'm reading still says that even on a financial level, it does pay off.
So now I want to ask you specifically about the various exhortations that you have for college-bound students, in particular Christian students. And first of all, you think that students should not adopt an attitude of entitlement. What do you mean by that?
This is so difficult. So many of us now come to college, come to life, feeling as if something is owed to us, that we're entitled. More and more students are, and their parents, just as bad, coming to school and thinking of education as a consumer product. And as long as they pay, they deserve an A somehow. Almost this feeling of, I've been robbed if I didn't get an A. Well, first of all, you need to explain to parents that if you're at a school where everybody in the classroom graduated in the top 15% of their high school, it is statistically impossible for all of them to continue to be in the top 15%. That's just simple math there. Right? People don't seem to know that. But we come in with, again, if there's anything the modern American is now, it's a consumer. Even Christians who fight against postmodernism almost take for granted they are consumers. I've paid for this and I deserve this. Whatever is good for the market is good for everything else. And this, again, education turned into a commodity. And what happens is, rather than feeling a sense of gratitude that you are given this opportunity, which is still rare in human history, the ability to get a four-year liberal arts college education is still a very rare thing and still is in the world. Instead of being grateful for that, we are sort of complaining. I'll just give a good example that I give because everything was messed up by COVID, right? Ever since COVID, the entitlement has gotten worse because during COVID, all the different things universities did to get around it, we ended up having to tape record a lot of our classes. And students that couldn't come because they had COVID, we could send them a tape recording of their class. Well, that unfortunately has led to a sense of entitlement that, hey, if I just feel like skipping class today, you owe me a recording. It's like, no, that's not what, this is an incarnational education. We were forced to do that for a while, but we need to stop coming there with a sort of chip on our shoulder and expecting things. We need to come with a sense of gratitude. Now, I teach at Houston Christian University, used to be called Houston Baptist University, and we have a lot of first-generation students. That means the first person in their family to go to college, and most of our first-gen students are Hispanic. And those are my favorite students because most of them are not coming with a sense of entitlement. They realize how hard their families have worked. I come from immigrant stock myself. My grandparents were all born in Greece, came to America about 90 years ago. So in some ways, I really enjoy teaching those students because they don't have a chip on their shoulder. They're there to learn. They're not resentful. They're not envious, all of this sort of stuff. And, you know, parents, sometimes we put too much pressure on kids. First of all, nobody ever cares about your GPA. I want to say that. I mean, maybe if you're going to grad school, they look at it. But people don't care. Look, you should work and do as well as you can. But don't expect you're going to get an A in every single thing. There are some things I'm better at and some things I'm worse. But again, this new idea that everything must serve me, everything has to bend and flex to serve how I feel at the moment is only leading to more anxiety. It doesn't lead to joy. It doesn't lead to gratitude. It leads to a feeling of, I am owed this. I want an Oompa Loompa and I want it now. That's what it's led to. And again, COVID has made that worse.
So the next thing that you mention in terms of an exhortation to college-bound students is you exhort them to be grateful for the opportunity they have to study, which is an interesting thing because they, as you mentioned early, you know, they're investing a lot of money in this. So how are ways they can be grateful for the opportunity that they have to be in college?
First of all, look, a lot of people don't realize this, Melanie. Okay, we've got the Ten Commandments. The first tablet of the law is generally between man and God, but the second is between us and our neighbor. Love thy neighbor. And we all can understand why it says, do not kill, do not commit adultery, do not lie, do not steal, right? That's pretty obvious. But the Tenth Commandment says, do not covet. Wait a minute, do not covet? How am I hurting my neighbor if I'm coveting his wife or his farm or his animals, right? I mean, isn't that a victimless crime? And yet God knows what he's doing. He shows that poisonous root of coveting, which is the same thing as envy, resentment, coveting is like a poison or a cancer that gets in the veins and we end up resenting everything. Now, the opposite of that, the way to get away from a sense of resentment and entitlement is to feel gratitude that you are being afforded this opportunity. Now, yeah, we are paying, okay, although a lot of schools do give some kind of scholarships, but it's the position. Let us come there not with the mindset of what can I get, more the mindset of what can I learn. I'm getting this chance to spend 4 years immersed in the great ideas that have defined humanity for, you know, 6,000 years, more like 4,000 years, going back to Abraham, let's say. And that sense of gratitude brings with it a kind of joy and wonder that opens our heart so that we can really learn. It opens us, whereas entitlement sort of closes us off from really learning or being changed. Gratitude throws itself open to learning and being transformed and being challenged. And again, see, a lot of good parents force their kids to write thank you notes, and that's a good thing. But if all you do is force them to write thank you notes, but you never instill in them a sense of gratitude, then you're almost creating a monster. You're creating someone who thinks, well, I wrote that letter, so I don't have to be thankful, right? Thankfulness is a matter of the heart, a kind of gratitude that is thankful to have this opportunity to learn and grow and be challenged.
So not only do you have some do's, but you have some don'ts. And one of the don'ts that you have is don't become a cynic. So my question to you is, are students more cynical now than they have been in the past? Or do you find that college age you know, kind of between 18 and 23, maybe, have they always been kind of cynical?
I mean, there is. I mean, there certainly is that period of questioning. But what we must avoid, I think your readers will recognize Psalm 1. Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, or stand in the way of sinners, or sit in the seat of scoffers. And the thing I encourage young people is don't become a scoffer. Unfortunately, more and more in education, we have this idea that a more educated or wise person is a more skeptical person, that the more cynical and skeptical you become, that somehow is a measure of maturity and education and wisdom. But I argue that cynicism and skepticism, there is a certain kind of skepticism that is good, that questions and wants to learn. But I'm talking about the kind of cynicism and skepticism that feels like I have seen through everything. I can't really learn from this. I'm looking down my nose at it. I'm superior to it. I will not be taken in by it, because there is no real goodness, truth, and beauty. It's just sexual repression. That's Freud. Or just market forces. That's Marx. It's the kind of cynicism that puts us above everything. So rather than learning from Homer, Virgil, Dante, Shakespeare, Milton, we stand in judgment over them and feel that we are somehow more enlightened, right, and tolerant and things like that. Instead of learning from things, we end up using them. Right? I mentioned at the end of my article in Screwtape Letters, Screwtape, the devil, says the best way to prevent people from actually learning from the great books and therefore seeing through the temptations of the devil is to make them, when they read a book, ask all sorts of questions. When was it written? Who wrote it? Why was it written? What were the influence? All this stuff. But never, ever let them ask, when they read Dante, is what Dante wrote true? Until we ask if something is true, it will not change our beliefs. It will not change our behavior. It will have no effect on us. And what I mean by cynicism is the spirit that has gotten very strong, that spirit that says, I'm above everything. I've seen through it. You know, Shakespeare, and now I understand Shakespeare is just a product of social, political, economic forces. I don't need to learn from this genius because I have seen through everything and I am wise and all-knowing. And I tell you, that attitude is not only very bad spiritually, it prevents you from actually learning anything, right? Look, you know you're going bad in seminary when you get to a point where you judge the Bible rather than letting the Bible judge you. So that's kind of the spirit I'm getting at that causes irreparable harm. It prevents us from really learning. It just holds everything at arm's length, and I'm protecting myself from anything that might challenge and change me on a deep level.
Before I ask you about your next exhortation, I hope our listeners will bear with me because I want to read a paragraph from a New York Times op-ed that really speaks to what Lou just shared and then also kind of, you know, sets up the next question I want to ask him. And so the op-ed is called "The Key to Success in College is So Simple, It's Almost Never Mentioned." It's by Jonathan Malziak, who he's a writing teacher at the University of Texas at Dallas, and he wrote this, quote, "Knowing this is everywhere in our culture. The posture of already knowing supersedes the need to approach new situations with curiosity. Every semester during my years teaching theology, students would tell me on the first day of class that they knew that they would get an A because they had already had 12 years of Catholic school. But often enough, they'd get a C. Their assumptions about the subject matter kept them from learning the more critical approach to the subject I was trying to teach. Knowing this is a danger, especially for talented students who have been rewarded for always having the right answer. At the University of Pennsylvania, undergraduates complain that student clubs expect prospective members to have extensive knowledge about a club's area of interest. Once, in a cafe near an elite liberal arts college, I overheard a student lament to another, quote, "I can't take a Russian history class. I don't know any Russian history," end quote. And the writer says, "Of course not. That's why you take the class," end quote. So I want to ask you this question that you said in your exhortation: approach knowledge with wonder and awe. And how is that different than what this author talked about? This professor said that knowingness is everywhere and it's really damaging to students.
Well, first of all, let me say something that sometimes is shocking. A lot of times the students that do really, really well in high school don't always do well in college. Now, the reason for that is not always, but a lot of times the kids that ace high school are kids that just have a natural ability and they almost never have to study and they get all A's. What happens when those students go to college is they don't do well, because in college you can't just get by on a little bit of, you know, knowledge and stuff like that. A lot of times the students that had to work hard for their grades in high school actually do better in college, because they come with a sense of humility and a sense that I need to work. Okay, I can do it. I've got the skill, but I need to work for it. And they end up valuing it more because they work for it. A lot of times when it was too easy for you in high school and you never really studied, they don't. And see, one of the things about college is that college moves faster than high school. Also, generally speaking, the tests you take in college will cover a lot more material than the classes you took in high school, right? But there's another aspect of what you're getting here, and that is this sense that, well, I've already memorized the facts. I know the knowledge. I don't need to know anything else. I've got it all figured out. And Socrates, and then after him, Plato and Aristotle said, knowledge begins with wonder, a sense of wonder, a sense of awe, a sense of humility. Right. So many of your readers will know the famous story about Socrates, that an oracle told him that he was the wisest of men. So he started questioning everybody because he felt, if I can find somebody smarter than me, then I will know the oracle's wrong. But in the end, he discovers that he is the wisest man, not because he knows everything, but because he knows that he doesn't know. Right. Wisdom begins with the sense of our own limitations and that we have to still keep growing and learning, being lifelong learners. And wonder makes us, again, feel not crushed, but humble before the great works that we're learning, and it makes us more receptive. But when we have that idea, well, I got all this figured out, there's nothing more you can teach me, then there is nothing more that you can teach, be taught, right? You're closing the door. So away from cynicism, away from... The funny thing is, I think in some ways our most postmodern schools are the most parochial schools. In other words, they're so narrow, all they know is their little postmodern woke stuff. They're not actually open to anything else. I would like to see students, the students listening to this podcast, to be open to learning new things and growing and developing and being challenged. And again, but you can't do that unless you have that sense of awe, that bated breath that is ready to feed on knowledge, right? Like the Bible talks about sort of feeding on the word of God, how good taste and see that it is good. That is the attitude we need to come with, taste and see that it is good.
So one of your final exhortations to college-bound students is you say that they should not stand in judgment over the past. Why are you telling them don't stand in judgment over the past?
Again, one of the bad things about cancel culture and the tearing down of statues, that finally stopped because they started putting them in prison for doing it. That's why it stopped. But anyway, is this idea that Lewis called it chronological snobbery, that we are necessarily wiser, more tolerant, more enlightened than the past. And we dismiss the past as necessarily dark and superstitious and ignorant and biased or something like that. And what happens when we do that is we're not going to learn anything from the past. I love what C.S. Lewis once said. He says, if you want to really understand the medieval knight, Don't study the knight from the outside. Try putting on his armor and looking at the world through his visor. We need to have that humility that is willing to say, you know what? Maybe these people from the past did things better than we do. Now, again, they also did things worse. We've certainly progressed in some ways. But again, we have to get out of it. We sort of insulate ourselves and think that everybody before us was necessarily stupid or necessarily intolerant, the way we describe that word today. And again, if you have that attitude of always standing in judgment, you will never learn. You will have, to quote the Bible, you will have eyes, but you won't see. You will have ears, but you will not hear. I remember something really neat that Dennis Prager once said. Prager said that he was reading the Bible, and it said about Noah that he was a righteous man in his generation. And he said, why do you need to add in his generation? Well, that's it. We need to look at these writers within their generation. Maybe they did have some blind spots, but we also have blind spots. So let us, again, we're too quick. If an ancient writer says anything that we now think is taboo, we want to dismiss everything they said and refuse to listen from them. So we must not cancel the past. The past is what we need to learn from. And if we're any better, it's only because we've learned from them already. So we have to get out of our progressivist echo chamber that keeps telling us, patting us on the back, that we are the most noble and tolerant people of all time. We need to get out of that echo chamber and really be willing to learn at the feet of a Homer, a Virgil, a Dante, a Shakespeare, a Milton. We need to be willing. And that includes pagan writers, as you just saw. There's a lot that we can learn from them.
So do you have any final words of encouragement as probably students and their parents feel a little bit overwhelmed? They've got to make this big decision. Will they get it wrong if they choose the wrong school? Will they regret where they're telling, you know, them yes at a certain school and then regret in the summer, I should have gone somewhere different? How can students and their parents just approach the next few weeks as they make that final decision about where to say yes to attend in the fall?
I still believe firmly that if you go to a good college, university, good liberal arts university, get a four-year degree in something you love. That could be science, but it could also be history or English or philosophy. You study, you do your best, you challenge yourself, you write, you learn to think coherently. I believe you are going to do well, right? You're going to get yourself a job and people are going to notice that you're different. Again, some people have a very specific calling to nursing or pre-med, but even then, I think I said this, but let me say it again. Even if that is your calling, you want to get a nursing degree, we have a great nursing school at my school, still make sure you spend time with those liberal arts, you know, they're usually called the liberal arts core classes. Spend time with that to start thinking about things so that you don't become so narrow. Get that specialization that will allow you to do the job you feel called to, but also invest yourself in that school. Learn what you can. Join some clubs as well. Don't isolate yourself completely, because one of the things that a good college teaches, I think, is how to balance your sort of work life, your family life, your extracurricular life. It teaches you to balance things if you do it properly. And again, even if they're at a school that has some of these woke postmodern teachers, and some of those end up at Christian schools too. So again, that doesn't mean all is lost. Make sure there is good fellowship there with other people. When your child comes home for Thanksgiving, talk about what they're learning. Talk about the ideas, what undergirds them. Again, use it as a good way of discussing the presuppositions that undergird what we believe. And I think if you do that, you're going to be okay. But again, there needs to be that support and fellowship, and it needs to be strong, and you need those lifelines. But as long as you have that, I don't think you need to be terrified.
Well, on a much lighter note, I have a fun rapid-fire question for Lou. And Lou is a professor How do you enjoy spending your summers when you have time off?
Well, I am a movie watcher, but I also just love doing conferences with these classical Christian schools. It is just, there's just so much joy and so much wonder there. The other thing that sounds boring is I love to go with my kids and go hiking. Not something that needs a backpack, but just walking trails and getting outside. I love that as well.
Well, thanks, Lou, for being a guest today on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thanks for having me on. It's great to be back.
You've been listening to episode 332 from the Postmodern Realities podcast. Today's guest was Dr. Louis Marcos. He has written a Viewpoint article, which is called Exhortations for College-Bound Students. And you can read his article for free at our website, equip.org. Stay connected with the Christian Research Institute and all the new content we have coming your way. The best way to do that is to head on over to our website, equip.org. There you will find thousands of free resources right at your fingertips, from articles to video to audio, and it's all for free. You'll find our podcasts hosted there, as well as the Bible Answer Man broadcast, which is hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and streams live every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. In addition, you don't want to miss out on subscribing to Hank Unplugged, which is the podcast of Hank Hanegraaff. And in that podcast, he has really in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people. And in addition, he has a new series on his podcast feed called Hank Unplugged Shorts, which Hank goes into the headlines in the mainstream media and refutes a lot of those cultural issues that we have in these short podcast episodes. And there's quite a few of them. You don't want to miss out on them. Now, if you want to find some of this at other places where it's all in one place, really subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's a great way to get all of our content there, our podcasts there, and different individual questions theologically that people have that Hank answers at our YouTube channel. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, I don't know how to subscribe to YouTube. I don't have a YouTube account. Well, actually, you might just have a YouTube account. If you have a Gmail address, you have a YouTube account. Just log into YouTube with your Gmail address and search for Bible Answer Man channel, and please become one of our subscribers. In addition, if you see that bell icon right there on our front page, please click that, and every time that we have new content, you will receive a notification that new content is up on our channel for you to be able to consume. So thank you so much for the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute. We are grateful for you listening and reading and watching.